For a time, we tried to contact him by radio, but no response.
Levine exploding to the goal. We saw that several times, including twice in the slam dunk contest when he was crowned champion. The game clock, Levine.
Payne races in. Mike Valentine back out. Portis, the fake, the step up. The jumper step.
Find that man every time down the floor.
36 for
find it. Portis.
Levine's eyes were at the rim, and it looked like it didn't take any effort for him to get there. Now he gets an open look at a three. And Kansas at the time the game.
I see your face, the way you smile.
What's going on, Bulls fans? I am Edward, and this is episode 5 of the Bulls Gold Podcast. Back from another slow week for Chicago Bulls news as the offseason starts to die down a little bit as we inch closer and closer to preseason, and training camp, I believe, will start soon as well. But I wanted to start off this episode with a discussion about Bobby Portis. Bobby Portis was arguably the Bulls' best player last season, following the trade of Nikola Mirotic to New Orleans. And right now I'm working on a write-up about Portis and his long-term view or long-term future with the team, as well as what he accomplished last year. It was essentially a third-year breakout for Portis at age 22, a very impressive season. The biggest thing that I noticed about Portis last year was the improvement of his jump shot. Portis has come a long way with his shot. If you remember as a rookie, and we can even go back to Summer League, and while the results of Summer League aren't really important, Summer League can show you just some early traits of players, especially in terms of how they're, you know, how they are shooting in particular situations. And Portis, when he first played in Summer League, his jump shot, while not bad from a result standpoint, his form was very slow. You could see that it took Portis a little while to gather himself before beginning his motion, and sometimes he would have a little bit of a pause or a little bit of a hitch at the top of his release. It was almost like it was almost kind of a set shot in a way. It didn't have a lot of potential to do anything off the dribble or anything if somebody attacked via, you know, if somebody closed out well on him or contested the shot well. It was just a very slow and low upside shot, or at least in terms of mechanics. But if you go to, if we fast forward to last season, Portis's jump shot looked very good. And the biggest improvement in that is that he doesn't have a hitch anymore. His motion is more fluid, and he can now get his shot off clearly, whether he's being closed out on well, whether the ball isn't delivered in the right spot to him, whether he has to catch it low or he has to catch it high. Portis almost has different release points now. Like, he's actually become a very good shooter. And if you go to the Bulls Gold Twitter account, there was a stat on there that showed the statistical improvement of that shot. And I believe last year, Portis on jump shots was at about an estimated field goal percentage above 50%. Now, for comparison, Lauri Markkanen was at an estimated field goal percentage of just under 50%. I believe it about 49.6. So that's just going to show you how big Portis's jump shot really was for the team last season, even going as far to make about 80 threes last year and attempted almost under 5 threes per game last season. So he was much more of a floor stretcher. He could get his shot off in different scenarios, improved in the low post, just all around just a very good offensive player. And if we look at his per 36 minute stats, Portis averaged 21.1 points per 36, I believe 10.9 rebounds, 2.7 assists. Those are very good numbers. In addition to having a true shooting percentage of about 54.8, I believe, and a player efficiency rating, I think it was 19.8. So again, very good offensive numbers. And if we look at Vo's per 36 stats, only 9 of her players in the league played at least 1,500 minutes last season and averaged 20 points and over 10 rebounds per 36 minutes. And most of these players are very good. If we go down the list, it's Karl-Anthony Towns, Anthony Davis, Nikola Jokic, Jonas Valanciunas, Julius Randle, Kevin Love, DeMarcus Cousins, Nikola Vucevic, Joel Embiid, and our own Bobby Portis. Now, Portis is, he clearly ranks last on that list in terms of win shares from last season, but it just gives you an idea of how good Portis was last season and what was essentially a third-year breakout. Now, the write-up that I'm going to be posting soon on the Bulls Go website mostly is about Portis and how he's going to challenge the Bulls' objective of asset accumulation. Now, we've heard John Paxson and Gar Forman talk about this, and what asset accumulation is for them is to get very high upside young players, whether proven or not. That can be through the draft, it could be through trade, or it could be through free agency. The Bulls are viewing this rebuild as a chance to get those type of players while maintaining flexibility and giving them chances to reload and still have a young and competitive team going forward that could eventually, I think, build a nest around a superstar if they are able to get that player one day. Now, that becomes a much more effective strategy if the superstar is already on the team, i.e. If Zach LaVine, let's say if Zach LaVine does become a superstar one day, I don't think he will, but I mean, if he does become a superstar one day, you already have a really good supporting cast then with Dunn, Markin, and Carter, whoever else, Chandler Hutchinson, whoever else is still on that team. This would be a team that would be in great position to have such a player. But maintaining Portis obviously comes with a price. And what I'm writing about now is that the Bulls and Bobby Portis simply may have very opposite goals in mind with this next contract. With asset accumulation, the Bulls are only going to want to retain Portis if they view the financial terms on the next deal as an asset to the team, whether that be to trade it or whether that be to keep him. They want that deal to be an asset. They don't want it to end up like Cristiano Felicio's deal right now, which some view is just essentially dead cap right now because he's not even the backup center this season unless Robin Lopez is traded. He's the third center on the team. Or if you go around the league, you look at someone like Gorgie Jang on Minnesota, who's not a bad player, but he's getting paid 14 to 15 million per season to essentially be a backup power forward to Taj Gibson, or the third big, also with Karl-Anthony Towns in the mix, which is a lot for that role, especially when you look at their, they don't really have a deep team. They don't have a really strong bench. Or if you look at Houston with Ryan Anderson, who I believe is making close to $20 million per year there, and towards the end of the season, he wasn't even in Houston's rotation consistently. They would love to get rid of Ryan Anderson. So that's the type of situation where the Bulls need to avoid with Bobby Portis. They don't want to pay him a ton of money in what's essentially going to be a capped role, because he's clearly behind Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. in terms of priority with the team. The Bulls need Markkanen and Carter to be very good. Now, Bobby Portis being very good is a luxury. If he's very good, then great. Then you have three bigs who are all starter quality players, but you don't necessarily need three bigs who are starting quality players. It's kind of like back when the Bulls had Joakim Noah, Carlos Boozer, Taj Gibson, and Omer Asik. That was in 2012 as well. They had four bigs who could start on a number of teams. So when Omer Asik hit free agency, it was a big deal as to whether or not the Bulls should keep him, because they were in a position different than the current team where they were contending. So to keep your players while you're contending, to put out the best roster possible to challenge the Miami Heat, were the team to be at the time, to challenge them, that would have been the main goal. But then a team like Houston came along in free agency and essentially paid Omer Asik a contract that I think was a loophole for it was a loophole in the CBA. It was basically a poison pill third year where the contract was structured as and it would only been like this for the Bulls. It would have been $5 million in the first 2 years annually, and then the number ballooned to $15 million. But for Houston, the contract was about $8 million per year, something like that. So Houston paid Asik to not be an asset to the Bulls, and the Bulls decided to let him go. But then the Bulls did end up keeping Taj Gibson, I believe, for $33 million over 4 years, which turned out to be a very good deal. And if we go back even further down the line to the Ben Gordon, Kirk Heinrich, Luol Deng teams with Andres Nocioni, who signed a $30 million deal over 5 years with the team. And Nocioni was essentially the sixth man on that team behind Luol Deng. He and Deng played the same position. I believe you could play Nocioni as some small ball four, and the Bulls did that a lot. But Nocioni was largely a luxury because if Deng did go out, he could step in and play really well. And when he came off the bench, he brought a lot of energy. He played on both sides. He was just a very good player at his peak for the team. But that just goes to show you the luxury that you have sometimes when you hit on draft picks at certain positions that you don't really need. And that's kind of what the Bulls have right now in Bobby Portis. Bobby Portis, a very good player on most young teams who aren't really ready to win. Bobby Portis would probably be a core player. But on the Bulls right now with Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter, he's just not in that position. And it will be interesting to see if a team prioritizes Bobby Portis in free agency, given his youth. I think he'll be 23 years old when he hits free agency. And he'll have a background of improvement to fall back on. Youth improvement is a very good combination in free agency. Especially with Bobby Portis, who's shown now that he can be that modern role offensively as a big, where he can step out and hit the three, and where he can also play inside and bully some people down and, you know, play with his back to the basket. He has a little bit of a mid-range game. He can play the pick and pop. Offensively, you get a lot of different things from Portis now. And that can be very appealing. But for the Bulls, you have to look at it now as, what is the number where Bobby Portis no longer becomes an asset to the team? His cap, if Bobby Portis makes it to free agency, restricted free agency next summer, I believe his cap hold would be a little bit over $7 million. I want to say $7.3 million. So whatever the starting number is for Portis in contract negotiations, if the Bulls have indeed made an offer, as I believe Casey Johnson reported that they did make an offer to Bobby Portis, we haven't heard anything about that since. So I think some of the popular thought is that the Bulls made an extremely, extremely team-friendly offer, because anything other than that wouldn't make sense, given that they probably are trying to prioritize cap space again next summer. So offering Bobby Portis something like $12 million wouldn't really make any sense, because that would probably be a situation where you would want to at least see what the market is bearing, or you would at least want to see what you can do without Portis first, and then you can operate from there. So again, we go back to the $7.3 million cap hold for Portis next season if he is indeed tender the qualifying offer by the Bulls. That is probably around the neighborhood of what the starting salary in an offer would be. So you could probably guess that the Bulls maybe offered a deal of around maybe, let's say $32 million. Let's say a 4-year deal around $32 million that starts with a $7.3 million salary, or maybe a little more, maybe a little less, more or less. But let's say that's the deal, or that's being offered. That would kind of be similar to what the Bulls got done with Taj Gibson years ago. Now, granted, that is a smaller cap that they were working with, but that would kind of fit and make sense in terms of an offer that at least offers flexibility and is least tradable from the Bulls' standpoint. Now, if Portis rejects that, and I would guess that he would, because again, he's young, he's improved a lot. He doesn't have a ton of mileage on him right now because he's mainly just played off the bench. If you're Portis, you can probably get a little bit more on the free agent market. There should be more teams with cap space next season. And it's possible that Portis could hit $10 million if he continues to show improvement again this season. That's very possible. So what we're looking at is that Portis is probably going to challenge this initiative of asset accumulation. How far will the team go to retain him? I think a lot of people would probably just say, hey, we don't need to retain Portis at all. We need to prioritize getting better talent in the starting five or find somebody that is a true star. Let's get Jimmy Butler back, or let's get Kyrie Irving in the mix. You know, let's get somebody like that because we need a star and we can find another Bobby Portis, or we can find another six-man type player to play behind Lauri Markkanen. And I agree with that in a sense. You know, I do agree that the Bulls can probably make Bobby Portis expendable. And that probably isn't in really a trade sort of way because, again, we go back to Portis' salary for this season. It's a little bit over $2.3 million. And he's in the last year of a contract. So you're probably not going to get much for Portis because a team would essentially be saying, hey, let's give you a first round pick and we'll take Bobby Portis just so that we can have the right to match his contract in a few months. And to me, I think that's terrible. I think it's a terrible GMing. Unless, of course, you're getting a player like, you know, a really all-star level talent where there is clear value in having the right to match. But you're not necessarily getting that in Bobby Portis. So, again, a first-round pick just seems kind of, maybe that's pie in the sky in terms of trade value. And again, you're going with a small salary, so maybe you would have to add salary to have more versatility in terms of trade scenario. So it seems a little tricky to then enter next season wanting to trade Portis. Like you may want to trade him, but it probably isn't going to be as good as you would think it is. Especially when you consider that Portis will help the team next season. And if the Bulls are trying to make the playoffs, he helps in that goal. So reaching the playoffs would be more valuable than getting a first round pick, perhaps. So again, Portis, he is really going to test this initiative of the Bulls of asset accumulation. They got Jabari Parker on a 2-year, $40 million contract, where the second year is a team option. So it's essentially a 1-year deal tryout, an audition with this core that the Bulls have. And for the Bulls, that can be an asset because if Parker does play well, they can bring him back for another season at the same salary. And it's a very tradable deal. It's a very flexible deal. And they can still have him in the fold and still pursue max free agent as well. Now, outside of that, there's not a whole lot of big contracts. Omer Sheik's deal, which I believe is up after this season, and the Bulls can stretch the $11 million non-guaranteed next year. I think only $3 million of it is guaranteed, so they can stretch wave him and only have $1 million count on the cap going forward for three more seasons. Felicio's deal hasn't been an asset so far. I think, again, that's the type of deal that we would want to avoid with Portis. Maybe not the exact number. I mean, because Portis at $7 to $8 million would probably be a good deal for a team, but you would still want to avoid overpaying Portis in relation to what he's done. So I think Zach LaVine is really the only deal where it doesn't really seem like the Bulls really are clearly getting asset accumulation out of it, because it's very risky. You know, it doesn't really match at all if you're thinking about asset accumulation, because there is definitely a scenario where LaVine's contract could be an albatross for the team, even with the cap rising. I mean, close to $20 million is no joke, and especially given that LaVine has been very flawed through his career so far. I mean, it's fairly risky. It's not necessarily asset accumulation. So, I mean, Portis's deal, I hope that the team approaches that in the right way. I'm not sure if they will, but I hope they really do approach that in the right way. I wouldn't go past $7 to $8 million from an initial offer. Aside from that, I would prefer him to hit restricted free agency, and then we'll go from there. He just may not be in the Bulls' plans going forward, despite his improvement. That's weird to say, though. It's very weird to say, because he's good, but he just may not be in the team's plans given what they have in front of him. We go into next offseason, and I believe that we would have to lose Portis in order to offer a player the max, or even the near max. I believe that's how it would have to transpire, unless the Bulls dumped salary elsewhere, I think with Cristiano Felicio's contract or something else. But I believe that's how it would have to work. But I will have a write-up on Bobby Portis and his outlook with the team. I'll go a little bit deeper into his improvement from last season and just talk a little bit about what we can expect from him this season, where he's still a very important part of this team, despite probably being the fourth big right now? I guess he's the fourth big right now. I mean, if you're talking about Markkanen and Lopez starting and then Wendell Carter, I mean, he's either the third or fourth big. I don't know. But he's still an important part of the team, because we know he can score in a variety of ways, and we know he can score with efficiency as well. And even despite his defense just being very poor, if Portis can even just become a respectable team defender, I think his value would be very, very high as a basketball player, not necessarily a contract, going forward. Now, getting off Bobby Portis, I mentioned Zach LaVine and his contract and whether or not that's asset accumulation. And Zach LaVine actually came out this week, or sometime last week, with an interview with Vincent Goodwill of NBC Sports Chicago. And you should definitely go ahead and check that interview out. Again, it's on NBCSports.com. Zach LaVine talks a lot about the free agency process and what he's been doing in the offseason and how he feels about the team's parts moving forward and what exactly his mindset is now coming into this season after using last offseason to rehab from his ACL injury. Again, a very, very encouraging interview to me, because I feel like Zach said a lot of the things that you wanted to hear. He talks about defensive awareness, and, you know, he acknowledged the miscues that he's had there. He's very aware of his downside on that side of the ball. He knows he's good on the ball. LaVine has shown that he can be a very respectable man-to-man defender. He moves his feet well. He seems to contest shots well. Like, he plays with a good motor in one-on-one situations. It's just, you wish you could get that same thing, or at least a respectable amount of it, when he's off the ball. Because, again, we've talked about it a few times on the on past episodes, that him and Jabari Parker, they really get caught ball watching a lot, and they are late on rotations because of it, or they're late in movement because of it. And that's one of the things that at least I'm hoping to see less of this season. But again, definitely go ahead and check out the interview from Vincent Goodwill on NBCSports.com for Zach LaVine. It's a very good read. A little bit of a stark contrast from what we saw or heard from Jabari Parker on 670 The Score last week, in terms of just kind of being aware of everything around him and realizing that, you know, I've got to improve at this to be, you know, great. Like, he knows, LaVine knows what it takes to be great, but we just have to see it in terms of basketball IQ and instincts and awareness on defense. Like, the talent is there. He has skill. Offensively, he has, to me, I think offensively, he has the complete package. He can handle the ball. He can shoot off the dribble. He can get to the rim. Elite athleticism. Even after the ACL injury, he's still a very good athlete. And yesterday I think it was a tweet from Ball Is Life, showed Zach LaVine at Jamal Crawford's pro-am, and LaVine dropped 50 points, I believe, and had a few highlight reel dunks. So in there, even then, we still see the type of athlete that we have with Zach LaVine, just a very explosive athlete and one of the premier ones in the NBA. So again, everything is there with LaVine. The contract, it can be good if he continues to take improvements. If he can become I think the expectation is that he can become an all-star level guard. I think that's a fair expectation from fans and probably even the front office, that during the, you know, bulk of this contract, or maybe even towards the end, or some, just a decent amount of time during this contract, that Zach LaVine can become an all-star level player. I think the Bulls need that to happen. And that seems to be the reason why they didn't want to just lose him. He's still a big part of this rebuilding process. And along with Dunn, along with Parker, Markkanen, Carter, Portis, Hutchinson, I mean, the upside is there for something to be really interesting going forward. And LaVine is a big part of that. So, again, go ahead and check out the NBCSports.com interview with Zach LaVine and Vincent Goodwill. A very good read that just lets you into everything. One of the things I'm still surprised at, though, right now, is that David Nwaba remains a free agent. I'm very surprised. I mean, I guess I could be, again, I'm probably just a little bit higher on David Nwaba than I should. I like his two-way potential a lot. Good athlete. He has the motor. I felt like the Bulls played, even though the stats don't really suggest it, I just like the way the Bulls played when Nwaba was on the court, especially towards the end of the year. I feel like he was starting to improve a little bit in the areas where he really needed to, especially as a perimeter shooter. He just shot the ball a lot better after the All-Star break. Mechanics looked better. He looked more comfortable, especially taking that corner three. And if Nwaba can make that corner three, if he can prove to be a decent floor spacer, I mean, man, a team is going to get very good value out of him. So that's why I'm a little surprised that he's still a free agent. I believe we've seen rumors that the Los Angeles Lakers were interested in bringing him back, that San Antonio and I believe Cleveland has shown a little bit of interest as well. But again, Nwaba remains a free agent, and the chances that the Bulls bring him back seem to have been completely diminished now, because the team now stands at 14 guaranteed contracts after Antonio Blakeney signed his deal. So there's really only one spot left for the regular season, and the chances that it's David Nwaba, they're pretty much non-existent at this point. So it'll be interesting again to see where he ends up. I see good value there. Even if it's just a one-year deal, I think you're getting good value with somebody that's going to play on both sides of the ball. And he can play different positions. He's a 6'4". I think he has close to a 7-foot wingspan. Just, again, I wanted the Bulls to bring him back, but I understand with the moves that they made that that's not possible. So I'm hoping to see him end up in a very good situation. But all in all, it's been another slow week for the Bulls news-wise. Ryan Arcidiacono signed a contract with the Bulls where I believe it's a non-guaranteed deal. So it's essentially a training camp invitation. Arcidiacono was on a two-way deal with the Bulls last season, and they rescinded his qualifying offer after after signing Jabari Parker, I believe. So Arcidiacono will be in training camp with the Bulls, probably play a little bit in preseason. It wouldn't be shocking at all if the Bulls offer another two-way deal to him. Also another player who will be on the Bulls next season with a training camp invitation is Antonius Cleveland. And Antonius Cleveland was picked up off waivers by the Bulls. I believe the Hawks had to waive him to make room for the Carmelo Anthony deal that went down this week. And Antonius Cleveland, I really don't know a whole lot about him. Though I've seen some interesting clips that have been floating around on Twitter, I believe, courtesy of Locked Up Bulls. Again, that's Locked Up Bulls has some interesting clips of him on his on defense, defending some very good scorers, I believe, in Andrew Wiggins and Kawhi Leonard, I believe, as well. Just showing some good defensive ability on the perimeter and maybe even a few glimpses of some three-point ability as well. So I know he played with Dallas and Atlanta last season, and I believe Golden State had him in Summer League a year ago, maybe. But he's bounced around a little bit in his short time in the NBA. So he will be on the Bulls training camp roster. And again, right now the Bulls roster sits at 16 players, 14 guaranteed, 2 non-guaranteed deals. And that does not include Rolly Alkins, who is on a two-way contract, who will also be on the Bulls preseason roster as well. But that concludes episode 5 of the Bulls Gold podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Please check out our website at ChicagoBullsGold.com, as well as give us a follow on Twitter at Bulls Gold. Got a lot more content for you guys coming over the next few weeks, and we'll see you next time for episode 6 of the Bulls Gold podcast.